Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team. My hope is to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. When I was a young teacher, a school leader would always remind us that right before parent-teacher conferences, the parents and families are our teammates. We all want the best for our students, and it's our job to make sure that families feel like a pivotal part of the support system, whether it's through better communication, inviting them into the process, or sharing resources to help empower them. Today, we are diving into this very topic with an inspiring team from Wyoming Indian Schools. And joining us today are Patrick Hall and Laura Frederick, who set a bold goal this year to build transparency and strengthen connections with families in their school community. They're here to share how this mission has impacted their students and what they've learned along the way. So let's get into it. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
So first of all, and I can pass this to either one of you, but I would love to hear about your school and your district and some demographics and even just goals and maybe what makes it an exceptional place to learn and work.
So at Wyoming Indian Elementary School, we're a very small district with just almost 1,000 students, pre-K through 12. We sit on the heart of the Wind River Indian Reservation in Fremont County. I'm right at the base of the Wind River Mountains. We service 100% Native American students from a couple different tribes, mainly Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho, but there are some other indigenous tribes mixed in there a little bit here and there. We are at the elementary school, which is the pre-K through fifth grade. And Pat and I actually had the opportunity to teach together before I was an administrator, before he was the MTSS coordinator back in Cheyenne, Wyoming, where we had one of the very first RTI high functioning teams ever in Laramie County School District number one. And that's when we both got hired at Wyoming Indian Elementary School. And that's a whole nother long kind of complicated story. But as it comes about, Pat and I were both really excited to have the opportunity to try to put this in place for the students that we serve here, because we do have quite a history and a whole barrage of things that are working against our students. So we really needed something that would work not only for our staff, but our students both. And because we had the same goal in mind, I think it moved a little bit quicker than it normally would. But I'll let Pat kind of take it from here and kind of tell more about his journey as that MTSS coordinator and how we started.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. Yeah, like Laura said, she and I worked in Laramie County School District number one together. And we, for those who are not familiar with Wyoming, is about four and a half hours away from where we currently work. And we both just happened to end up here around the same time and kind of relinked up as she got the principal job at the elementary school and they were hiring an MTSS coordinator. And that's something that Laura said, we were very fortunate enough to, for me, it was my very first year teaching that I learned. I got to enter into that really high functioning RTI team at Davis Elementary in Cheyenne, where I learned a ton about MTSS. And most importantly, I learned about the impact it can have on kids and the learning that it can create for our students. And so that's something that I quickly became really passionate about after seeing the results that we were able to achieve at Davis for our students. And so then seeing that Laura was the principal at the elementary made it super easy for me to make that transition over to Wyoming Indian Schools. My wife was also teaching out there, so that also made it pretty easy to make that transition. But I will say that I can't say enough about Laura's role in helping create this at the elementary school, because I think with school administrators, they can be your biggest partner or they can be your biggest hurdle, depending on how they approach and their approach to leadership and had their views on MTSS and all that kind of stuff. And so Laura having, I think she one of the things that both her and I benefit from is having experienced MTSS in an effective way. I was just talking with our superintendent about the fact that you can learn a lot about MTSS and courses and seminars and webinars and things like that. But until you've actually seen it and been a part of it and seen what it is really like, it's really hard to grasp how to do all the different components of MTSS in an effective and efficient way. And so that's what I think really gave us the power to basically hit the ground running when we started here at Wyoming Indian Schools.
Well, I love sort of hearing the background and understanding. Number one, I want to comment on, I'm sure that even though Wyoming is a big place, it can probably feel like a small community running into educators elsewhere. So I just wanted to mention that because I thought that was interesting. I love your comment, Patrick, about how your school principal can either be your biggest supporter or your biggest hurdle to making MTSS effective. And I'm sure that we'll kind of talk a little bit more about how you guys have partnered to make this happen. And so I know that, you know, part of a goal that you guys had this in this year was to really increase that family and staff involvement in MTSS. Can you first tell me when did you start this process of building MTSS into your school?
So like true, like effective MTSS, we started 4 years ago. And Laura and I started as soon as before I even accepted the job, I came and met with Laura and talked with her about kind of her vision for MTSS at Wyoming Indian Schools. And then we basically started right from there, starting to build it out. And there had been, you know, attempts at MTSS and RTI and things throughout the past, but we recognized that there was a lot of work still to do in terms of understanding and really getting systems that really were efficient and effective for our kids and consistent for them. And so that was kind of the first place we started, was just getting all of the systems going in the right direction, starting with screening the kids. Then immediately, one of the things I think our biggest and probably our best step that we ever took was we immediately just started doing data meetings. And because, like I said before, it's one of those things I think that you have to experience to really understand the power of it. And so Laura and I had sat through countless data meetings together and with our colleagues in Cheyenne. And so we both knew kind of what we wanted it to look like. And so we just decided to go for it as soon as we got that first round of screening done. Data meetings were not something that had ever happened out here, not in terms of involving like the whole staff, involving the teachers, involving, you know, our interventionists, involving our special education staff, like getting all the stakeholders involved. That wasn't something that had really ever happened before in terms of looking at screening data and things like that. And so that's what we did, was we immediately started by looking at the data, which there had been a hesitancy, I think, in the past to share the data, because like when we started this project, we had 5% of our kids who were able to do their, you know, operational fluency in math on grade level. There were 8% of our kids reading at fluency rates on grade level. And so we had, you know, the data wasn't pretty to look at. And so I think sometimes it's easy then to not look at it when it's not something that, you know, you feel reflects well on your school or your teachers or your students. And so we ripped that Band-Aid off right away and looked at the data and started talking about what we were going to do about it. And that was kind of our really big first step. And then from there, we just kind of built things out off of that. And so the one thing that we've been basically uncompromising about is that we meet every about 6 weeks to look at student data. And no matter what, we make sure that that happens, even though there's lots of other things going on and activities and reasons why we could potentially push the meeting back or cancel them or whatever. That's been something that we have not compromised on, is we're screening kids 3 times a year. We're looking at their data. We're making decisions about that data. We're progress monitoring weekly for our highest needs kids, biweekly for our students who don't need quite as much of a close eye. And then we're making decisions based on that data.
So going into this year, was there, even in that process, did you feel, what kind of prompted this specific goal around bringing families and, you know, having more stake or more transparency with them? What brought that on?
I think so. A couple of things. One is that we do kind of a self audit every single year, and our state has a really good tool for that, a fidelity of implementation rubric that we use specifically for MTSS and for our system as a whole. And so each year we fill that out and look at, you know, where are our areas that we feel like we're making a lot of ground, where are areas that we still need to work. And one of the areas that kept coming up year after year was family and staff involvement in the process. And so from a staff, and it's kind of different because like staff are very involved in the process. They are in on the meetings, they're in on all the decision-making and stuff. The area where we felt our staff needed the most support was in getting on the same page about our procedures and our systems and how they work versus our families. For a wide variety of reasons, family communication is quite difficult at our school. We have lots of families who don't have, you know, a consistent means of communication. We have a lot of families who have had really negative experiences with public education, whether it be like we still have people out here who, for a lot of people, when they hear this, it can be jarring for them. But like we still have people alive who attended boarding schools out here. We have kids who their grandparents or great grandparents literally were at some of the boarding schools where, you know, there were all sorts of atrocities that were committed on Native American students. And so just that alone creates a bit of distrust towards the public education system for our population. And on top of that, a lot of our families have had negative experiences with public education since then as well, whether it be them as students or family members that have, you know, struggled in the education system, or their children that they've watched grow up and have struggles, and whether it be, you know, dropping out or not graduating, or, you know, whatever it might be. We have a lot of our population doesn't have a high amount of trust for the education system as a whole, for very valid reasons. And I say that, and I'm going to say something too that is completely contradictory to that, but it's interesting too, because our community really values education. Like they really support teachers. Like when we go to, you know, the local that we call it the Ethity store here in Ethity, Wyoming, it's the like one convenience store out here on the reservation. But when you go there, like, and they see your badge, like people are very friendly to you and really will give you lots of words of encouragement for being an educator. But at the same time, there's also this stigma around, you know, the education system as a whole, and whether or not, you know, does the system have the kids' best interests in mind? I think our community for the most part believes that the teachers have the best interest in mind for our students, but they are not always as trustful of the system as a whole.
Man, I just want to pause you there. That's, you kind of named something that I think that you know, I know that probably if impacts your community in a greater way, but, you know, I've encountered those kinds of parents, you know, in my tenure as an educator that had a very big distrust for the system, the school system, you know, and sometimes that came out as distrusting individual teachers or in, you know, just distrusting that the system was going to help their student in the long run. But it is very interesting that they have a great respect for the educator, but a distrust for the system. And that just makes so much sense. It just kind of gave me chills when you named that, because I think that is really important then in how you structure how the support and how you communicate the system and the protocols that you're putting in place to the families to help them understand how that will help their student. Can you talk a little bit about some of this, the goal specifically, and like what you were kind of hoping to do with that goal of more transparency?
Yeah. And that's the big thing is transparency. I think that like when you have that, you know, lack of trust going on or potential lack of trust going on there, I think that we thought the best thing to do would be as transparent as we possibly can and to be as consistent with our communication as we possibly can. And so like we have parent-teacher conferences twice a year, like most school districts do, where parents and guardians and things can come in and talk with our parents and our teachers and stuff. But we wanted to take the step beyond that. And so we started a system of communication with families that as soon as their student has entered into an intervention, whether it be academic, whether it be reading, math, whether it be behavioral, whatever it might be, that we send out letters letting them know, here's why they're being placed in this intervention, here's what the intervention is, who their interventionist is, here's when it occurs, here's all the information we could give them on, so that they know exactly who's seeing their kids, what they're working on, how often that's happening, things like that. So that, because in the past, we would have parents who would come to parent-teacher conferences and it'd be the first time that they'd learned that their student was in a reading intervention. Or we, even worse than that, we would get kids that we were on the verge of referring for special education. And the contact about possibly referring them to special education was the first time they'd been contacted about their kids' academic struggles. And so we wanted to really make sure that the parents are a partner with us in this process for supporting their students. And I think what we found is that we've seen basically improvements across the board in just about everything from attendance to reading scores to math scores to behavior. Everything has basically, you know, ticked up since we've opened those lines of communication more. Laura, yeah. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, one thing I was going to add to that is just that constant messaging from our front office staff to our attendance team. Every phone call we make revolves around those same concepts about transparency and making sure, like, even when we call and make an attendance call, we're like, hey, you remember in the letter we sent you, your student receives an intervention from 9 to 10. So if that, we have to have them here for that time. So we make sure that in not just written communication, when parents come in, we try to catch them, phone calls from the front office staff, everything is messaging the importance of those interventions, of our programming and how we do it and why we do it. And just that constantly parents are reminded that we not only value their input, but also we want you to be a part of that team. And I think that has really made an impact for us. I have parents, my first conversation anytime I have a parent in my office about behavior is I thank them for coming in and being brave enough to come in and advocating for their child, because not everyone has that ability to do that. I think really trying to build those bridges and acknowledge the steps that are being taken to do so, making sure about that consistency and transparency across the board throughout the school.
Well, and so I'm curious a little bit about how it has gone taking this step with the staff. How have you helped bring your teachers and your team a part of this communication effort?
Yeah, Pat needs to really give himself some credit, because the first few meetings, our first problem solving meetings where we kind of knew what was going on, but the teachers did not, and they had never been included in anything like that. The data wasn't great to look at. Pat really did a great job of framing that as, hey, we're learning this together. This is a process that we're all learning together. And I think the way we brought our teachers along are exactly what then they're repaying to the families that we serve. So it's a process. You're a part of it. We're going to make mistakes. We did make mistakes. We learned from those mistakes. And then we just keep trying to get better. And that's the same message that our staff hears, our families hear, our entire school feels like they are definitely a part of the change. And then pretty soon we'll talk a little bit about using our own students' data to show.
Just going to ask that.
Yeah. So that's really where the proof's in the pudding, right? So when you start to look at, and that, when we started this 4 years ago, I just wanted to give a little background that I had been the assistant principal at the elementary school for a year and a half. Then I got moved to the high school for a year and a half, and then I came back as the head principal. So we didn't just jump in not knowing staff or anything. I just wanted to share that, because I would never recommend a brand new principal to just jump in the way we did had you not had a little bit of history in the school and with the staff that you're kind of trying to move into this system. So just FYI, so using our own student data is really where we started to see the change where teachers literally started to believe in themselves. And we talk about teacher efficacy all the time in education, but how do you build that and how do you continue to improve on that? Using your students' data and the things that we saw happen right before our eyes, you could talk to any one of our staff members and they have a story about how MTSS has changed not only them as a professional, but them as a human, because we really started to see our kids as we have to have clean socks and underwear and food in our bellies before we can move on to the spelling test and reading fluency and all those kinds of things. And when we didn't have all those systems in place to service our students, it showed. It showed in our data, and it did for years. I mean, like Pat said, we had not seen an increase in, I mean, this is our school's 52nd year in existence. And for all those years, there were hardworking people, very hardworking people. But because we weren't all working in the same direction, it kind of felt very just non-successful.
Yeah. So when you talk about using your own student data, describe that a little bit for our audience, what you mean by this.
Sure.
Patrick, you want to take it?
Yeah, he takes sure. that. He loves this.
Yeah. So like I said at the beginning, like that at first, like if we're going to like solve a problem, we have to identify what the problem is and like figure out what the, you know, severity of the problem is. And I think one of the issues with kind of where we were at when we like right before we started was that, like I said, there wasn't a whole lot of sharing data with staff that had been going on previously. And so there were some like systems in place. Like we had very well-trained interventionists that had been trained in lots of different evidence-based interventions. And so that was a super beneficial thing for us to be able to kind of like build on that was already existing. But like the data wasn't even shared with our interventionists, wasn't really shared with our teachers and the rest of the staff. And so people, I think, kind of knew that like our kids weren't achieving where we wanted them to be, but they couldn't put like numbers to it or anything like that. And so, and looking back, I've tried very hard to like find this information, but we hadn't done a good job of tracking our data either. And so we had to just kind of start from where we were, which was, like I said, we were 8% reading proficiently and reading fluency, 5% with their math fac fluency. And so we just kind of started by showing that data and then looking at progress monitoring data along the way and making adjustments when progress monitoring wasn't showing improvements for our students, which wasn't always easy. There were times where things got contentious or heated because of disagreements about what people thought was best for our kids. And sometimes that can feel hard and personal, but like everybody, the nice thing was that everybody in the room was wanting what was best for the kids. It's just sometimes we have different opinions about what we think is best for the kids. And that's where I think the data becomes really, really important, because we can think and feel as much as we want about something, but when the data is not going in the right direction, it becomes hard to argue with the fact that a kid is still reading 32 words per minute in third grade or whatever it might be. And so, and luckily we saw the data start to turn around relatively quickly. And I attribute that to a lot of things. I attribute that to having the data in front of teachers all the time, to gathering it consistently, to teachers' hard work in the classrooms, obviously, and our interventionists' hard work with their intervention groups and their previous training that they had to be able to implement those interventions in an effective way. And like I said before, like we also had a ton of evidence-based interventions that were here that just we weren't seeing the results from that you would think you would get from having such highly evidence-based interventions previously. And so when we started seeing that data turnaround, it started piling up, right? Like we started seeing more and more positive progress monitoring graphs to look at in each grade level. That then eventually translated to improvements in number of students above benchmark on each of the assessments. And like started out slow at first. It was like, you know, 2-3% increase from like winter to spring. 3-5% increase from fall to winter, whatever it might be. But it just kept happening, like each time, each period, we just kept seeing, you know, we're 2 or 3% higher than we were the last time we screened them. We're 2 or 3% higher than the last time we, and it just kept piling up. And we just, and it has continued. Like, we were at this point, we are at 28% improvement over the last, still, it hasn't even been a full 4 years yet, but 28% improvement in terms of reading fluency and a 40% improvement in terms of MathVac fluency. So, and the really nice thing, the really exciting thing for Laura and I is, like, we know that, like, kids can do their math facts and read as fast as we want them to be. That doesn't mean that they're going to be able to do, you know, word problems in math. It doesn't mean that they're going to be able to read a passage and be able to answer questions about it. And that's another layer that we're starting to now kind of reap the rewards from the work we've done on those foundational skills of reading fluency and math fact fluency, is we're starting to see now that translating into those more complicated tasks of reading comprehension and math and overall, you know, general math ability. We're starting to see more and more kids proficient or close to proficient each year. I think we're going to see some big gains in those areas as well, which is super exciting.
That's so exciting to hear. We often say, you know, MTSS implementation takes 3 to 5 years to really just start to see the results of that work. A lot of that foundational work that you do to build your systems and train your teacher and getting everyone in the boat steering in the same direction, I think is part of that work, is you build that momentum. Which I love that that's what I'm hearing, is you're seeing the snowball effect of working on these foundational skills and how that kind of translates to the more complicated skills for students. I'm curious, how does your staff feel? Like, we talked about, you mentioned collective efficacy. What has that done for your culture?
The culture in our building has really taken a turn, a good turn, a turn for the best. And I don't think teachers meant to, but sometimes there was this mistrust. It just happened, you know, because somebody didn't trust the work ethic or the things that were going on in different classrooms. And when you bring everyone to the table and you hold everyone accountable, and that is a piece to it, is accountability. And it kind of happens naturally, but there are times where I've had to go in and have hard conversations with teachers about, hey, this is what we're doing and we need you on board. So, and there's a couple choices you can make personally, but this is where the direction we're going. And just really holding, and Pat and I do a really good job of holding each other accountable, which helps me to hold others accountable. But that really has changed the culture in our building. It's one of trust that was never there before. The other thing that comes out in the data is you start to see there's some really great interventionists that are particularly good with, like, a certain program. And then we're like, so then we know. And we're getting so good now where we can see what the kids' deficits are, and we know what to, like, prescribe them based on our experiences and the interventionists that we have. And they start to really everyone takes pride in that, not just the teachers, not just the interventionists, but really relying on each other and trusting the work that is done. Like Pat talked about before, we had interventions in place, but the teachers didn't even know what they were, and there was never any communication. And so it kind of happened in isolation. And if you saw it in the classroom, great. If you didn't, well, darn the luck. But now our teachers are getting so empowered that they start to see, like, oh, wait, I know what this kid needs. And to sit in a meeting where teachers feel the power and are really taking control of the ship is what we all, I mean, that's like the pie in the sky, right? So kind of that whole culminating feeling of, wow, this will last. This will last beyond me. It will last beyond Pat Hall. It will last beyond the teachers that we have here, because our systems are securely in place.
Yeah, and I do think it's important too to, like, talk about, like, to your point about the interventions, like, about 80% of the interventions that we use were being used before we started this change.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like we came in and, like, really, you know, we're going to scrap all these interventions because they weren't working. We're going to start using these ones. Like, somebody had done a good job of finding, like, some really evidence-based interventions that are very effective. They just weren't being done in the most effective way, and not by the interventionists. That wasn't because of them. Like, they were teaching it and teaching it well. It's mostly also the same interventionists teaching the same interventions. Yeah. It's the system around it that was really lacking. And that's where we made a big shift in that. But also, I think, like, to Laura's point about, like, some of the kind of cultural change happening, a lot of it happened organically. But I also think that, like, she doesn't give herself enough credit about the intention behind some of the things that we did to make sure that certain things happen. Like, I remember very vividly, and I'm sure she does as well, a staff meeting where she had to tell a staff member that, no, we are progress monitoring. Like, that's a non-negotiable thing that we are. Everyone is expected to progress monitor their kids. And we didn't just ask or tell people to do it. She built time into their schedule on Fridays to make sure that there was that there's literally a block in every single grade level schedule and classroom schedule on Friday mornings dedicated to progress monitoring. And not only is there a block of time carved out, but we've also found ways to carve out people. So if people need help getting through all their progress monitoring, like our younger grades, sometimes they're doing letter names and letter sounds and nonsense words, right? And so if we have kids who are doing kind of like a bunch of different things, that's a lot for a kindergarten teacher to take on by themselves. And so we've found times where, you know, we have paraprofessionals or other staff who can come in and help ensure that the progress monitoring happens and it doesn't just all fall at the feet of the teacher. And so,
yeah.
And a couple other things I do think have been super impactful in the last like year that we've done is we've been really intentional about increasing the amount of transparency across the school as well. We've implemented instructional rounds where teachers are going into other teachers' classrooms and seeing, learning from each other. And we're kind of breaking down the doors literally in terms of opening up classrooms to each other. We've also been really intentional about having people from other grade levels attend a different grade levels, what we call problem solving meeting or data meetings, so that they can see what does it look like for second grade? Like, what does it look like when second grade has this meeting? Because a lot of times it can feel isolating when it's the same group of people. Like, we have more stakeholders even in the fifth grade meeting, but they don't always see what does first grade look like? What does third grade look like? And et cetera. And so we've intentionally opened those doors as well to try to increase the transparency within the building as well.
I love that you kind of named something as far as, you know, well, like building that transparency among the staff, but also, Patrick, you mentioned that Laura made time in the schedule for teachers to do the things she was asking them to do. Because I think one of the most difficult things is when your boss says, hey, you need to do this, but then doesn't provide the structure or the resources to make it actually happen. You have to make space for it to happen or it doesn't happen, right? Like, I mean, we talk about that with habits and different things in our lives all the time, right? If you don't actually make space in your schedule to work out, you're not going to do it. I think that that's the same case with your leader if you're asking that to your staff. And how empowering is that for a staff member to say, hey, I want you to do this, but also here's the time to do this. Here's the resources. Here's the support. And it's like you're eliminating any kind of barrier they have to actually making that happen. And it's a relief, I think, for a staff member. Absolutely. Oh, I'm not alone in this.
Yeah. I do think having been in the classroom for more than 20 years myself, being a classroom teacher, and I always consider myself still to this day a classroom teacher, even though I'm a principal and have been for quite some time now, I literally loved my time in the classroom. And I always, always go back to that. That's why I'm part of the screening team. I love to screen kids. I love to know where everyone's reading levels are. And I don't know every kid, but I can talk about every kid in our school and know something about them. And I feel like that's what, for me personally, when I was a teacher, that's what I wanted in an administrator. So I try really hard to think like that still. If a teacher says, hey, can you progress monitor? Guess what? I absolutely can because I know how to do that. So I think keeping it real for an administrator and making sure that you truly understand the pressures that a classroom teacher are feeling. We talk about it a lot, but a lot of times people rush into administration, you know, after just a few years in the classroom, and they don't have a good handle on that.
Yeah.
And so I try really hard to, as an administrator, still keep in the, you know, in the trenches, if you will, by subbing, being part of those teams that really do see and make some of those really hard decisions for kids, because it makes a difference for your staff. It really does. And then, you know, not one teacher has ever come to me and said, well, you don't understand. Because guess what? They know I actually do understand.
I mean, I had a mentor one time tell me that in, you know, a school leader, really school or even district leader, is like about after 5 years, you've kind of forgotten the day to day, and that you should go back and sub in some classes or take on a class. Just really effective leaders doing that kind of thing can really help keep you grounded in what you're supporting. And I just have always thought that that's important to not forget what the demands of the day-to-day of a teacher are.
And what a game changer it is to keep your feet grounded in what's, and keeping the main thing, which are the students and their growth. And so I think really owning that and being okay not knowing things, but being okay to jump in and help out, keeps me wanting to stay in the game and wanting to keep making strides to be better.
Well, I'd love for you to talk a little bit, kind of, I mean, so a lot of this sounds like you've been reflecting on this work, but you're taking these steps and, you know, this year was really engaging parents and families within the work. Maybe what are you guys thinking already looking into? I know you're already thinking through next year, right? Like that's what we do at this time of year. So what are you hoping that, like, some of the next steps or next changes would be?
Actually, Branching Minds is what comes to play. I'm going to let Pat talk a little bit about it, but really the template that we're actually going to put into place this next round of problem solving meetings based on just some feedback we've gotten from staff.
Yeah. Branching Minds has helped quite a bit in terms of just like consolidating all the stuff that we do instead of having to go from, you know, three different platforms to see the different pieces of data that we're trying to look at. For our kids, we can kind of keep it in mostly in one place. In terms of other goals, I think Laura would agree, we still have quite a bit of work to do. I think in terms of family involvement, I think we have a pretty good plan now for keeping our staff up to date. We didn't really talk about it too much earlier, but what we did this year was we noticed that even though they've gone through the same trainings with us and stuff, even though most of them are returning staff, not everybody is fully on the same page about our procedures and our practices within the system. And so we just did quick refreshers at the beginning of this year. So, and we were really targeted with it. So like right before we screened, we refreshed everybody on like the screening procedure and everything that the teacher's role in it and what we were going to do with all the data after. And then once we finished screening and we're about to have our data meetings, we did a quick refresher on the data meetings and what that looks like and what that procedure is like and everybody's role in it. And then once we finished those data meetings, we did a quick refresher on progress monitoring. And so we just have done these little refreshers for our returning staff. And then we've also looked at training for new staff. I think we're starting to get to the point where like we need to make sure that we just continue to do these things and we don't let it fall off. And there are some changes that we still need to make and to improve, but we're starting to get to the point where like the changes we're making are really incremental and really mm-hmm. small and really nuanced things. We've made a bunch of the big changes now. And so we're trying to now kind of to slowly refine what we're doing. But also I think the thing that we really need to continue to be cognizant of is like continuing with what we are already doing and not just continuing to do it, but like continuing to ensure that the capacity is still there when we get new staff. As staff, you know, comes, they're now 3 years removed from the training we did on whatever it might be. And so continuing to just ensure that we're on the same page and continuing to just ensure that we keep that capacity up for our staff is one of our biggest things, I think.
Yeah, it's the deepening of the practice. You know, you continue to reveal layers of where you need more training. I love that. And I think that sounds great from where, you know, like where you're at in your journey, and just a great next step if you're kind of done with the big changes. It's now just getting tweaking and getting better little by little. So, well, thank you so much for both for being here and just sharing about your school and about the work that you're doing. I'm excited to hear more and in the years to come and how great the progress that you continue to make. And I'm sure that your staff and your students are really lucky to have both of you and your commitment to the work.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.